Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show. We've got Michael Tellinger, and he's an author, scientist, explorer. He's become a real-life Indiana Jones, making groundbreaking discoveries about ancient vanished civilizations at the southern tip of Africa. His continued efforts and analytical scientific approach have produced stunning new evidence that will force us to rethink our origins and rewrite our history books. And he's the author of Adam's Calendar, Slave Species of God, Temples of the Africans and African Gods, and Ubuntu Contribution Blueprint for bad writing, whatever. Way to prosper. What is that again? Blueprint for increased
human prosperity.
I gotta write more legible. Anyway, welcome to the show, Michael.
Excellent. I love to hear you fumble over your own writing there.
This is a down-home show. I love it. We don't have any major sponsors or censors or anything, so we can go anywhere we want.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, James, and I look forward to seeing you soon at Contact in the Desert.
Yeah, it was awesome having you here at the ranch, too. We'll have to get you back out here again. Actually, you are coming back out here August 22nd to the 25th, I believe.
Exactly, and that's what this is all about, isn't it? Just we got to tell people that we're going to be with you, and I can't wait. Louise and I are so looking forward to being at the ranch and having two full days to go through a lot of work, a lot of research, and participate in question and answer, which I hardly ever get a chance to do.
Yeah, it was always awesome having you and Elizabeth here at the ranch, and it's always a pleasure. Anytime you're family here, so anytime you're in the neighborhood, be sure and drop by.
Yeah, awesome.
I wanted to go talk about some of those. You have so many different irons in the fire. You're kind of like me. You have many hats going. But you've got the books. You've got Adam's Calendar, the origins of humanity with Enki and Enlil and the Anunnaki. And then you've got the Ubuntu program going on. I don't know which one you'd like to cover first, but maybe we can start at the beginning with the ancient origins of the Anunnaki and some of your research and where that's taken you.
We're just completing our tour of Australia as we speak. We're here at the Sunshine Coast, just about 2 hours north of Brisbane, which is really spectacular. It reminds me a lot of the beaches of South Africa, some of the beaches that I grew up on. And beautiful weather, even while it's in midwinter, you can still go out and swim, and the water is about 25 degrees Celsius, which is what makes the water about 80 degrees or so Fahrenheit, so it's beautiful
nice temperature
water.
Yeah, I just got through paddleboarding out in the Columbia, and that water's pretty cold. You fall in, you know it, but it feels good after you've been paddleboarding for a while.
Yeah, and we just, this is Louise and my first trip to Australia after many years of Australians asking us to please come down here, and it has been an absolute amazing journey of discovery for us. It completely has blown us away. First of all, Australia is an incredible land with ancient activity, which you probably know, but many people may not be aware of it. There's phenomenal ancient history here, and we've been very fortunate to see some of these amazing sites. For example, one of the rarely visited ancient sites that has got Egyptian hieroglyphs on it that predate anything in Egypt, according to mainstream dating techniques and Egyptologists. So what they've got here in Australia is evidence of Egyptian activity that goes back many thousands of years before the Egyptians are supposed to be around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen the petroglyphs in Australia. They're just very similar to the ones in Egypt.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's truly spectacular. And what's blown us away is just the numbers that the Australians have been coming out to hear us, to hear me talk, and to see Louise and I. We've had less than 300 people at any of the events. It's been spectacular.
That's awesome.
And in Sydney, we had close to 500 people. It's just completely blown us away. So what this tells us is that after 5 years of working our backsides off, and as you know, going to the United States and Canada for 5 years in a row now, this is going to be our fifth year coming to the USA. Finally, I think we're picking up the critical mass, not just in the USA and Canada, but also in other parts of the world like Australia. Mm-hmm. And the message is finally filtering through, and it's just amazing.
Awesome.
And what you said right up front, you know, leading into this, is that I've got many irons in the fire, but it is really just showing how all the research, as you work through the knowledge of ancient civilizations, you start to realize how it impacts on who we are today, mm-hmm. and how important it is for us to learn from the knowledge of the ancient civilizations. Otherwise, it means nothing. That knowledge and information is completely useless until we put it into context of our lives and our world today, and how we can mm-hmm. learn from the ancients and put it to good use for humanity today. And that's really what the Ubuntu contributionism part of my presentation is all about. And I think this is really what people are coming to see. They come to listen to the presentations and the research because they find that there's a positive message, and there's a message of hope for humanity today, and that is really what's getting people going. So on that note, I want to say that I'm going to be focusing a lot on the Ubuntu and contributionism and what we've been doing with the Ubuntu movement worldwide and how it's exploding around the world. I'll be focusing a lot on that at the event at your place at the ranch the weekend of the 22nd to the 24th of August. Mm-hmm. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, I'd like to get more details. I've been following your work for a while, but I'd love to get some of the details on how to apply that, you know, and you know, a situation that would be, you know, highest and best good for all. I know that we had a discussion about that earlier, about how the elite, you know, control people through manufactured lack, and people are enslaved through dependency, and you know, they've got all the power and all the grids, you know, sewed up and things like that, but you know, with this new awakening happening, all this new energy technology is coming out, new farming technology, you know, the abundance of nature is starting to come forward. And I know that's what's happening in your work, is showing people a different way of life, you know, minus the elite and the hierarchical programs that create the manufactured lack.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know a little bit about what your information is that you're getting regarding the Anunnaki and their activity here, because they, you know, their effects can be felt for hundreds of thousands of years here,
mm-hmm.
and it seems from the latest information that I get is that their effects are still being felt, and they are probably as active here today as they have been in ancient times.
Yeah, you know, actually, you've got, you know, you have the sons of Marduk, which are the Bush family, are all involved in that organization, and you've got all these other groups, and Marduk was kind of like the bad egg, you know, he made an alliance with the reptilians and the greys and regenerate ETs and things for total control. But, you know, it seems like, you know, as your research shows, that, you know, they've had a long history of turf wars and fighting amongst each other and things like that, and they definitely fell, and we're still dealing with that. I mean, you look at all the religions, you know, Marduk was behind the Muslims, you know, the, you know, Jehovah, you know, which was an Anunnaki, all these things, you know, we got the wrathful God, you know, Enlil would be the jealous, wrathful God that wants humanity to be gone. And then you've got Enki, which was the all loving, all forgiving God, you know, you might say. And, you know, we have a schizophrenic religious program going on here when people don't understand the real history on where we got our images of God.
Yeah, it definitely seems that there are levels of consciousness and separation of consciousness among the Anunnaki themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, some of them have been lured by the dark energies and the ego and the personal gratification and satisfaction and a hierarchical structure, while some of the others, like Enki, realize that that's not going to last for long, and put into place and encoded into our DNA our capacity for ascension, our capacity for expanding our consciousness and growing in consciousness until we pretty much reunite with the source field itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm beginning to see through my research now is exactly that. What many psychics, many channelers, many wise people have been saying about humanity being, a divine creation that has got infinite potential to become co-creators. I'm starting to understand that very differently to what I probably thought about it a few years ago. And mm-hmm. and what I'm finding out now is that all that information and all that capacity to ascend is actually encoded in our DNA. And that is a spectacular breakthrough.
Yeah, and they seem to have an ability to activate that as well, some of the higher dimensional beings. We've actually been in contact with the council lately, the Council of 12. And, you know, they took a holiday for quite a while, and they left a few behind to oversee things, and they just ran amok and pretty much screwed everything up. But our understanding is that they're returning, and it's part of their karma to clean up that side of it, and they're calling the fallen ones before the councils now. So we're seeing a lot of the, there is kind of a dark hierarchy, you might say, with some Anunnaki at the top of it and some other unseen energies that aren't so positive. But there seems to be a huge cleanup process going on, and they're now playing their part. They're actually kind of working from the top down and calling these people in, saying, hey, you've totally violated universal law, and this can't continue. And I guess it's a pretty horrendous situation that they find themselves in.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. I've been pointing out to my understanding of this universal law or what Star Trek has been calling for many decades now, the prime directive, right?
Yeah.
And there's a beautiful way of describing it that seems to resonate with a lot of people, and it comes to my research into resonance and harmonics and frequency and showing, the ancient civilizations in Southern Africa, the fact that I've been able to find evidence of that was used in those gold mining, vast gold mining empire of Southern Africa, that they used sound and resonance as a source of energy. And so that feeds in beautifully into the explanation of resonance as the primary source of the prime resonance frequency of everything in creation, and how everything must coexist in harmonic resonance. Otherwise, you are in dissonance and in dis-ease with source prime directive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably a nice way of describing that you cannot breach the prime directive. In other words, you cannot go against the prime resonance frequency of creation. And the moment you do that, you become dissonant and in disease, and the prime resonance frequency will eventually expel you. It may take a few thousand years. It may take a few milliseconds. It may take a few hundred years, but eventually, you will get expelled out of the prime resonance frequency or the prime directive.
That's a good, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, that's a great way of explaining it because they've been telling us that a lot of these dark hearts are not going to be frequency specific to the evolution of Earth and where she's going. And so they're basically imploding, and I'm watching one after another having heart attacks and committing suicide and actually taking out all those around them that they're in fear of, because these people are total control freaks and they're in fear of other people trying to take what they've got. And so it's all this stuff is being amplified and energized and it's all unfolding as we speak.
Yeah. And what you said about Enki being the sort of all loving creator entity, it totally resonates with the research that I'm doing, is because you can see the work of that knowingness encoded in our DNA. And that's the evidence for what you're saying. So that's exactly how I see it. The fact that we had all this knowledge and information encoded in our DNA to enable us to after the 2012 event, which I believe was the event for which it was planned, where our DNA actually got activated on a very high level. So that 98% or more of our so-called junk DNA is now kicking in and just firing all those cylinders, those trillions and trillions of cylinders of coding, and allowing us to think higher thoughts, to move towards higher consciousness and towards higher love very rapidly, is clear evidence that Enki, or whoever it was that was ultimately responsible for the manipulation of our DNA, encoded that information in our DNA, giving us the ability to do that at a specific time in the future. Why did he do that? Because he knew that if he did not do that, he himself and his crew of geneticists would be breaching the Prime Directive. Mm-hmm. And so that's why they did it. And I think this is why I have a strong sense that the Enki energy and the Enki presence is very much here now because of this activation of our junk DNA and our rise towards consciousness, where humanity is going to need some higher level and higher spiritual and higher conscious guidance, because it could lead to a lot of chaos and confusion among people as they start waking up and asking questions and wondering where to from here. Coinciding with that, now I guess, is the message of Ubuntu and contributionism, which plugs in 100% into that philosophy of absolute unity consciousness and moving away from every and any possible draconian enslavement efforts. And this is why I believe that message of Ubuntu and contributionism is starting to resonate so amazingly with people around the world. Mm-hmm. It's truly taking us by surprise.
Well, I know the advanced civilizations don't even have a monetary system, and they're already living in unity consciousness, and they do what's highest and best good for the whole, and the whole civilization lives that way. And you know, the whole universe is their playground. They can jump dimensions, and they have technologies that we can only dream of. But, You know, it'd be great for us to move in that same direction, and we'd probably also have a quantum leap in evolution.
Well, I guess that's where we're heading, ultimately. And, you know, Louise often gets upset with me because she wants to go there right away. And I often say, well, that's our final destination. But, you know, some people that are already higher conscious thinkers are probably much closer to moving into those realms and a possible frequency separation, dimensions, or whatever the hell it is we're going to experience in this reality. But for the rest of the porridge eaters, as they sometimes refer to by some of my friends, that consume, you know, Bold and Beautiful and the daily global media that keep them enslaved, they need to be held by the hand. And they, you know, if you want to take them along, you know, I believe that's a high conscious decision itself. Is, do you just leave the porridge eaters behind, or do you take them by the hand and slowly take them into the deepening waters of higher consciousness without freaking them out?
Yeah, I think one of these days, you know, the grid's just going to shut off, and then the TV's not going to be there, and all those other influences, the psychotronic energies and everything, and all of a sudden it's going to flip a switch in them that's going to go, wow, you know, the dream's over, you know, the false reality is going to come to an end. And then what do you do after that? You know, then you have to rebuild it, you know, create something new.
Yeah, and the sooner that happens, the better. But I guess all of this stuff is in divine, its own divine time. And whoever is helping us orchestrate and plan these activities here has a better perspective of it than we do on the ground here.
If you
can see this from above, like you and I would watch an ant colony moving around, you know, we can see exactly what the ant colony is doing. But the ant colony probably isn't, the ants don't always know what the others are doing.
Yeah. And these guys can go forward or backward in time too, so they know the outcome, you know, of things, and they can steer things in a little different direction.
Yeah. That's another exciting thing, is that whole manipulation of time, space, and space-time, and how that has been used and abused also. That's mm-hmm. But that's such a freaky subject that I think most people, and so, myself, I struggle with wrapping my head around that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. If let's say somebody assassinated me, which I've had attempts, you know, and then they would take me back and put me in time and then move me from that event, you know, where I just move my head just an inch or something, so nothing happened. Like, would you even know it happened? You know, you could have been killed 30 times and you wouldn't even know it because they move you back in time and restarted the clock. It's really interesting concept.
Yeah, it is. It is a freaky concept.
Yeah.
But I guess it's like watching a movie and you can rewind it and go back. And if you're the editor of a movie, then you can clip in, put in, you know, other things that were previously not in the movie. Saying, I don't like this ending anymore. Let's put the other ending in.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, that'd be interesting. I know they have that ability. They have time traveling. You know, from my understanding, and this is going on the dark side, some of their wars actually involve time travel. It's like if they get taken out, they just go back to that point and reanimate and take a left turn and fire back or cloak out or whatever. So it's amazing with beings like that. You would think, well, they're not only probably warring from another dimension, they're also warring with time, you know, on their side.
Yeah, that's a huge discussion. That historic global events have been controlled by entities with the ability to time travel. That's a huge debate.
Can you imagine if, like, Kennedy was still alive? You know, if that went through, you know, would we? He wanted to disclose all the ET stuff and all the technology and the black projects and bring all that out. You'd wonder if somebody went back in time and then allowed that to happen. Where would we be now? You know, what kind of civilization would we have?
Yeah, so the question is, and I think this is really the subject that Alfred Weber talks about a lot, are the different parallel timelines and the many parallel timelines and the many almost infinite parallel timelines, if you want to allow your mind to go there.
Yeah.
And you can go to any of those probabilities and live out those probabilities and those different timelines. It's freaky stuff, man. Most people, I, for one, struggle with just even imagining that.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, another aspect of you is, like, a pool cleaner or a trash collector or whatever, and just, you know, it's kind of weird. I mean, I've actually had dreams like that were pretty bizarre, and you have to just let go of your identity. You know, watching a ship morph from 1 to 3 and back to 1 again, you think about that. You go, well, which ship is the real ship? Which ship has the real people on it? You know, and they all do. They're all perfect duplicates, you know, of each other. And it really trips you out when you think about that. What if I was on that ship and the thing started jumping, you know, into 3 different times and then we all came together and there'd be 3 of me, you know, what would you do with that one?
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to wrap your head around. But so, you have to get rid of identity.
What information have you been getting from your channelings and contact with the beings that you're in touch with, especially those felines that seem to be so blissful?
Yeah.
I remember last year, this time, we were... Uh-huh. With you, Louise and I, with you, and I had a complete breakdown. I can't remember what time, when it was, but I had a complete breakdown while we were going through that.
Yeah, you got introduced to one of the felines, I believe.
I had a very similar effect. I just just remembered now when we were taken to the Egyptian hieroglyphs.
Uh-huh.
It's about an hour drive into the mountains from Sydney.
Yeah.
On the way there, you stop. At this huge ancient tree that is called, they call it the grandmother tree. It is a grandmother tree, isn't it? They call it, the grandmother tree. And as I walked up to it and I just stopped, I looked at this tree and I had a complete breakdown. I just burst into tears. I didn't know what came over me. It was the weirdest experience I had in a long, long time. Complete breakdown. I just cried like a baby. It's like I had some sort of past life memory there or something. Really interesting.
That's a lot of times. That's what happens is you have this huge awakening. And then, you know, you pick up all the emotions and everything all at once of a past life. Or sometimes it might trigger a much higher existence you had at one time. And as soon as that gets triggered, you feel that rush of energy come in, and that's a real intense one to handle, you know, that much flow of energy coming in at once.
It was as if I'd known everything about that tree and its history and had something to do with the planting of it.
Yeah. Well, those trees are wise. I mean, especially those old trees. You know, I always, when they clear cut here, I just go, boy, why don't you leave some of the ancient ones so they can reseed, or, you know, leave that energy, you know, that consciousness grid there. And, you know, but up here, you know, they love to just clear cut everything and, you know, take down 50-year-old trees and just turn them into slash when they'd be, you know, 50 years ahead of the time by just leaving them, you know, letting them grow.
Yeah.
But, you know, unfortunately, that's the way most of our society is operating right now, and just, you know, take as much as you can and just pure greed with no respect for the future.
I do get a feeling it's like what you call the powers that were, mm-hmm. is that they know the game's up, right? And they know the game's up, and they've only got a few years or so many years to carry on this exploitation of this beautiful planet. And it's like, okay, well, we'll just go balls to the wall. We'll just be as brutal and as draconian as we can, as destructive as we can. We'll just, you know, if we're going to go down, we're going to take the ship down with us. It almost feels to me like that's what's happening now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does look like that. It's like they're pulling out all the stops. And, you know, I just interviewed Captain K. I guess he's one of the super soldiers that was on Mars and all the other. And then we had Laura Eisenhower was just here, and been gleaning a lot of information from them. And it sounds like, and hopefully, that there is a large contingent of people that have maintained their integrity, that are maintaining their oath, and within the different agencies and the Black Projects and things like that are just, you know, had it up to here with the elite and what they're doing down here. And I guess hopefully they will eventually stand in before, you know, we turn into a total fascist state here, you know, or civilization. But, you know, it's gonna get interesting. I really have faith in the higher dimensions and what they're doing right now, as far as, you know, changing the grid and taking out the old grid. And once the old grid's gone, those kingdoms that are attached to that old grid are just going to fall. And the people that can't adjust to the new grid, that want to continue to play out those baser programs, are not going to fare well with this shift. And it's like, it's not like they're doing away with people. They're saying, hey, here's a golden opportunity. This is where the earth's going. Either jump on the wagon or we don't know where you're going to end up. You know?
Yeah, what you're saying is also important to expand on and remind people that it's up to us, everyone that's listening to this conversation, and anyone who's ever come to one of my presentations or watched my videos or watched your videos, it's up to us what we do with this information. Because, you know, you can sit on your backside and just wonder about it and think it's interesting information, or you can become proactive and you actually go out there and talk about the beautiful future, the opportunities that we have. And I guess this is why the Ubuntu contributionism philosophy is just, it's pretty much going crazy around the world right now. You know, we've got members in more than 215 countries now. Since my tour of Canada in April, and my tour, or in May, was it? And our tour of Australia, and now coming to the USA again, and then we're going back to Europe after the USA.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers of people that have been coming to see and listen to the message of Ubuntu and this new world without money of united harmony and consciousness and abundance abundance beyond our wildest belief, as long as we get rid of the money and the hierarchical system, which collapses the whole competition philosophy and introduces a cooperation philosophy. That's just blowing my mind, because as I'm speaking to you, we now have Ubuntu movements. Not only have we got members in more than 215 countries around the world, but we actually have Ubuntu communities that have started up. There are probably more than a dozen in the USA. There are close to a dozen in Australia. There are more than a dozen in Canada, or Germany, Switzerland, Austria, England, Ireland, New Zealand, Israel, Pakistan, Iran, China, India. I mean, it's gone crazy. And there are political parties, the Ubuntu parties, that are now being formed in the USA, in Canada, in Australia, New Zealand, Austria, Germany, Switzerland, Holland. I can't even think of many of several other countries, mm-hmm. but we're looking at least 12 countries that are starting Ubuntu political parties to follow what we did in South Africa and actually participate in the national elections as a political party of consciousness. So what has happened here? Without us planning this, this was not the plan, but it's just happened like this. So somebody is orchestrating this. Mm-hmm. Is it now suddenly we've created a global movement of consciousness and we've expanded into the political arena, not because we want to go into politics, and this is critical for people to understand, but because we want to utilize the political platform to inject a virus, a good virus of consciousness, into the political beast. And boy, have we done this successfully in South Africa. And this is really the example that everyone is looking at now. And I'm just wondering whether this is what the Hopi and at least four other Native American peoples have part of their prophecy, as they say that the new age will rise out of South Africa. Very specifically, they say South Africa. And I wonder if this is what they were referring to. That this is, we just planted the seed, and it's now, you know, we did it in South Africa as a political thing, and launched the Ubuntu contributions and philosophy there, and now it's just gone crazy all around the world.
Well, yeah.
So it's a very interesting thing that's going on here, and I've said a few times in the last few interviews I've done, is that I believe more in prophecy now than I've ever believed before.
Yeah. Well, you know, it does. Ubuntu fits right in alignment with unity consciousness. And the ninth wave, you know, the Mayans talk about, and this just massive wave of energy that's coming through, and we're in the middle of it right now. And I've been feeling it, and they've been telling us the peaks and valleys of it. And, you know, they'll say, well, you've got maybe 2 weeks of intense energy coming in, and then the next ones will say you've got 3 weeks, and it's going to peak on this day. And we've been watching these energy waves coming through, and they're just like intense coming through, but. You know, the waves, they're all moving towards that consciousness of unity, cooperation, working together. You know, that's all part of the prophecy. So Ubuntu fits right into that.
Yeah, it is. It's all about cooperation as opposed to competition. And, you know, all the things that have been shoved down our throats for the last few thousand years, democracy and capitalistic system and all that is just suddenly being shown to be the enemy of humanity, the enemy of human nature, the opposite of what we should be doing, the tool that was used to steal human souls and lure them into arena of greed and ego. Mm-hmm. And suddenly people are just waking up to that en masse so quickly that it's completely taken me by surprise.
Yeah, I think people en masse are just done with the wars and the, you know, the enslavement through dependency and the lack, the manufactured lack, and, you know, we've done this redundantly, and I think people are at a point now where they're just saying I just don't want to participate in this anymore, and they're looking for something new. You know, what else can we participate in?
Yeah, and I guess this is it. This is so when they hear about the fact that actually is not just some loose idea of a new way. When they hear and see the very concrete steps and plans of action that we've put together with the Ubuntu movement, it really excites them. Mm-hmm. And what I can say with, you know, a certain amount of pride, without using pride as an ego, element of ego, just something to point out that we're not just talking about it, we're actually walking the talk back in my little hometown, is, you know, we started implementing these changes and these community projects in my little town, which has got about 4,000 people. Now, remember, African towns are very different from any other country in the world, because they still suffer, all the towns in South Africa still carry the apartheid legacy. They still divided into what's known, what used to be known as the sort of the white suburbs and then the township or the shanty town.
Yeah.
Although now the white suburbs are filled with the nouveau riche, who are all the black elite, who have been sucked into the capitalistic beast.
Yeah.
And lured into it, and they've been turned into the new drivers of the capitalistic model. At the expense of their brothers and sisters who are still living in the ghettos and in the shanty towns, in larger quantities now, in larger numbers now than ever before. So you've got a larger separation between the haves and don't haves in South Africa than we've ever had before. And so to attempt to unite the people in South Africa is probably more difficult than any other place in the world from that perspective. But at the same time, it presents a great opportunity to unite the people, because there's so many people without any hope, so many people without any work. You know, in our town, we got 80% unemployment. Right. I mean, that's unthinkable in any other community. Mm-hmm. And yet people survive.
Yeah, I think it's the same in the States here. They just keep fudging the numbers. But, you know, there's massive unemployment here and you know, whole states are becoming ghettos, basically, with a lot of the programs are being implemented here.
Yeah, I definitely can second that, because, you know, Louise and I have traveled through the United States extensively on our tours for the last 5 years, and we've seen the decline of the United States over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot worse than most people can realize. We've traveled probably more than 120,000 miles throughout the USA.
Yeah.
So we've seen parts of the USA that most people will never imagine or will never see in their lives. And I can definitely tell you that it's not pretty.
Yeah, it's in decline.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
You know, the good news, too, though, is when you get enough people that – what I always found out is people are not going to act or move until it affects them personally. And now there are so many people that have been affected negatively on a personal level. You know, they've lost their job, they've lost their homes, they've lost their families, a lot of them have lost their health, and they're just done with this whole system here. And so you get enough of them pretty soon, it's like a wildfire waiting to happen. You know, the fuel is there, everything is there, ready to go. It's just going to take a match, you know, one match to be tossed on that, and you know, we could have another Rodney King incident, you know, where it could be turned into something pretty ugly.
I think it's also indicative of you. So what I was saying is pretty much also starting to happen in the United States, in South Africa, because the people are so impoverished and they have nothing left to lose. It becomes easier to try and actually unite them once you get through to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same is happening in the USA now. Once people have their backs against the wall, they got nothing left to lose, then they start to act and react.
Yeah.
But the one thing that people seem to still need is some form of leadership, and this is what's becoming very clear to me now, is that the Ubuntu movement is suddenly becoming like the voice that is saying or speaking the words that the people have been thinking for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying what everyone has been thinking, and people are going, wow, this is fantastic. You're saying, you know, what we've been thinking for so long, and now we're ready to act, and we're ready to support you and to stand by you and get this thing off the ground. But until somebody takes the leadership and takes the flag and say, right, this is it. We're moving from here. Mm-hmm. They sort of, while they are with their backs against the wall, there's this lots of uneasiness and restlessness until somebody takes a leadership position and say, right, we're moving in this direction. Let's go.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that I think that's even programmed into our DNA, you know, that...
Yeah.
That,
absolutely.
Yeah, we're waiting. We're waiting for some authority to step up and say, "This is what we need to do."
Yeah, but that's okay. So now that's happened, and not we're not the only group. The Ubuntu movement is not the only movement. There are various others. The New Earth Nation movement is doing it very successfully, uniting people around the world and making people pledge huge amounts of land. For last, I spoke to Sasha Stone from New Earth Nation. He told me that they've got land pledged and donated to New Earth Nation now that's larger than the entire country of Belgium.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. And this is what's going on. And so between New Earth Nation and Ubuntu, we're pretty much united, you know, joined at the hip. We're moving in the same direction, working together. We're on parallel tracks. And spreading the same message, doing slightly different things. But I do believe that if the Ubuntu movement is successful in infiltrating the political arena through political parties, using the political platform to spread the message of consciousness, and allowing people in their respective countries, including the USA, which I believe is critical in this, obviously, because of its role in the global arena, especially the USA, if we can infiltrate the political arena and allow the people to vote during the next elections for an Ubuntu party in their country, we will create, and we may have, Ubuntu parties in several parliaments around the world, possibly winning majorities in certain towns. And once that happens, once you run a town as an Ubuntu party, you've got the control of the budget. And then you can really implement the contributionist philosophies without anyone standing in your way. So if we're smart enough, we can use the system that was created to keep us enslaved to overturn it virtually overnight for the benefit of the people. So this is what I'd like people listening to this to remember that. We're not going to politics because we want to become politicians. We're using the political platform to spring the philosophy of consciousness into the political beast and the political arena. And if successful, we'll not only create the first ever transnational, trans-border movement of consciousness that's infiltrated the global political beast, but we would have taken possession and taken control in a nice way. I don't know what the other word is for control, a benign word of control right now. But taken control of our towns and small communities where we can win outright majority for the Ubuntu party and start implementing Ubuntu and contributions and philosophies. That will be... In fact, I can tell you right now, James, that if that happens, within 12 months, capitalism and the draconian control of humanity as we see it today will collapse. It's not going to take more than 12 months after that. And the reason I say this is once you have a small community or a small town that operates on a contributionist principle, it consumes and it devours capitalism, it destroys capitalism, and replaces it with abundance and freedom on all levels, abundance and freedom on every level imaginable. And that will spread like a wildfire of consciousness throughout every country, across every border, and across the entire planet very, very quickly.
Yeah. And it does seem to be in total alignment with this huge wave of energy that's coming in right now that's creating these shifts and changes. It's a perfect fit. You know, for where things are going.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And, you know, I'm just ready to go and do my presentation here at the Nexus Conference at 2:30. And this is exactly the message that I'm going to end off with. This is the message I leave the people with. So it is very different from the other conspiracy information, if you want to call it conspiracy, the other information that's out there sharing critical information, which could get quite dark and quite depressing. You know, because if you keep going around and around about the control and the other entities and the dark forces and all that, you know, people get more and more depressed about it, and they don't know what to do about it. So you've got to give them something positive to think about. So this is, I think, why people get so excited about this message, because they suddenly realize that it is very easy and that there is hope and there is a bright light at the end of this dark and gloomy tunnel.
Yeah, I think that's what we need. I know people are just fed up with the powers that be or powers that were, and they're looking for something new. They just don't know what that is. And they just need to have that packaged and then have somebody lead the charge, as you said. And I think it's going to be a firestorm once it gets going.
Well, so on this note, I want to say that I'll be going into a lot more detail when I'm with you at the Aseti Ranch on the weekend of the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of August. And I'll be dealing with ancient civilizations, the technology, and that's really exciting. But then really focus on the solutions and how we take this forward, the things that we're doing in our little town, and share that and how quickly that's growing and exploding, how people are benefiting from it, and how that can be used as a model for every other town around the world.
Yeah. Well, I've got some people, hopefully they'll be at your talk, that can contribute a lot of that, you know, especially on the fuelless energy technology. So that should get interesting, you know, as we go forward. We're hitting the end of the hour. What is the best way people can support your work and especially get more involved in the Ubuntu movement?
Well, the best way is, start an Ubuntu Facebook page in your area, and call it Ubuntu Trout Lake or Ubuntu Seattle or Ubuntu whatever, and start inviting people in your area to join and participate. So you start growing your Ubuntu minded philosophy and contributionism philosophy from among the people in your area. Notify us at the Ubuntu head office, if you want to call it that, in South Africa. Notify us that you've done it. Give us access to your Facebook page so we can post information there as well. And this way we grow very quickly to a global network of Ubuntu like-minded people. We are almost about to launch the Ubuntu website, the Ubuntu Planet website, under which there'll be Ubuntu USA, Ubuntu England, Ubuntu every other country around the world with their own smaller denominations and people that take care of different areas. But we do need continued financial support, because while we are still trapped in this financially driven society, we do need financial support. And as you know, I've been funding and driving this thing myself for the last 10 years, and it's getting to a point where I can no longer do it. It's getting too big, and too many people need our help, and too many projects that are underway now. So if you can, and anyone can make a small monthly contribution towards us, $10 a month, if you can afford that, go onto the ubuntuparty.org.za website. So it's ubuntuparty.org.za, and you'll see there are various options of a donation that you can make, starting with $10 a month. And every little bit helps, because of the community projects that we're starting, and I can only fund so much. So the more funding we get, the quicker we can roll out these community projects and lead by example.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from on that. I can only fund so much program, because I'm in the same boat here. But we'll definitely see what we can do to get that information out and to get people to making some donations. And we'll not just this radio show, but we can put that information out over our newsletters as well, and helped to get this movement, maybe expanding a little bigger than it is now.
Yeah, that'll be awesome, James. And you keep doing what you're doing, because you inspire so many people around the world, and you've certainly inspired me for many years now. So I truly appreciate talking to you. Every time we talk, I get inspired by who you are and what you've done. So thank you for that as well.
Oh, thank you. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're hitting the end of the hour. We're going to sign off with a beautiful song called Anunnaki Return.
Excellent.
All right. Keep up the great work, and we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, James. I'll see you at Contact in the Desert.
All right. And I'll see you back here after that, August 22nd.
Built your ancient temples. It came to right or wrong. We left our children to oversee a civilization at its dawn. Our children, they have fallen. Forgotten noble virtue, they were left here to serve our seeds we left behind. Like they, those who serve them have fallen just as well. Yet now it is time to awaken. Divinity prophecies have told. have fallen just as well. Yet now it is time to awaken. Divinity. Divinity.